From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Wednesday, December 18th, and here are today's headlines. The University of Vermont men's soccer team was given a hero's welcome at Patrick Gymnasium in Burlington yesterday afternoon. The team arrived via bus from the Burlington International Airport to greet a packed crowd of fans that included former Senator Patrick Leahy and members of the UVM men's basketball team, all on hand to celebrate the soccer team's NCAA Division I national championship after Monday night's 2-1 overtime victory over Marshall University. UVM fell behind late in the second half 1-0, but tied the game in the 81st minute with a give and go in the box finished off by Marcel Papp. Then, Maximilian Kissel scored the game winner in overtime after racing down the sideline to gather a long stretch pass by his teammate Zach Barrett. Kissel had one Marshall defender to pull away from before getting in all alone on the keeper for a breakaway goal. UVM's leading scorer, striker Yanov Bazzini, saw the play unfold and said he had no doubt his teammate would get the job done.
I knew he was going to be this defender, and I was already standing and starting to celebrate. With exhaustion, I just fell the moment the ball got in.
The win gave UVM its first national title. It also marks the first time any soccer team from the America East Conference has won a national championship. A committee tasked with looking at reforms to Vermont's landlord-tenant laws stopped short of making any concrete recommendations to legislators. The subject has become politically divisive amid Vermont's housing shortage. After lawmakers failed to advance a set of locally approved eviction protections last year, they mandated the creation of a committee to study landlord-tenant law. But the committee wrapped up its work this week without a firm stance on next steps. Senator Tanya Vihovsky, a progressive Democrat from Chittenden County and a renter herself, said she's disappointed.
I was really hoping to land in a space where we had recommended legislation, which we obviously don't. We're in a crisis. We can't do nothing.
Vihovsky said she plans to introduce an omnibus tenant protection bill this year. But given the recent rightward shift in the State House, proponents of greater tenant protection say they doubt the topic will see much action this year. A Vermont cannabis chain plans to close several shops after its parent company declared bankruptcy. Ceres Collaborative's parent company Slang Worldwide declared bankruptcy in November, according to 7 Days. The Toronto-based company closed a Ceres medical cannabis store in Brattleboro last week. And state regulators say Ceres' other medical retailer in South Burlington, a Burlington recreational shop, and their Milton production and grow facility will also close soon. Ceres Collaborative was the first legal cannabis shop to open in Burlington in 2022. At a special statehouse ceremony yesterday, Vermont's three members of the Electoral College cast their votes for the 2024 presidential election. Secretary of State Sarah Copeland Hanzis formally opened the event in the well of the House chamber. Then the three Democratic electors cast their ballots for presidential candidate Kamala Harris because she received the most votes in Vermont. After the ceremony, Copeland Hanzis said she feels the Electoral College process is outdated and should be replaced by a national popular vote system.
I think it makes a lot of sense. I think Americans want to know that the person who got the most votes by American citizens is the person who becomes president. And as we've seen over the last 20 years, that's not always the case.
Vermont is one of 19 states that have signed on to the National Popular Vote Compact, an agreement to give each participating state's electoral votes to whichever presidential ticket wins the nationwide popular vote. And the state will extend its mental health program for flood-affected Vermonters through July of 2025. The Department of Mental Health says they've secured more federal funding for the Starting Over Strong program due to the state's repeated flooding disasters. The goal of the program is to connect residents in Chittenden, Washington, Addison, Lamoille, Essex, Caledonia, and Orleans counties with mental health resources. So far, the state says they've reached more than 14,000 Vermonters. And coming up, Vermont Public's Erica Heilman speaks with an Upper Valley therapist who shares how she thinks class has helped change the complexion of her Upper Valley community. That's after this. Catherine Chana lives in the Upper Valley in Lyme, New Hampshire. She's a social worker and currently works as a therapist. She grew up in the house where she currently lives. In this latest episode of What Class Are You?, reporter Erica Heilman sat down and talked with Catherine about her childhood in Lyme and how that area has changed in her lifetime.
When I was growing up, there were rich people, like I didn't think of myself as being a rich person. I thought we were the hippies, you know, we were just like the weird people. But I think that I definitely grew up as like, you know, with a very privileged childhood.
Wow.
You know, like I had riding lessons, like I went to ballet lessons, like I went to camp when I was in high school. But when I was growing up here in Lyme, it was not a wealthy town. It was more subsistence farming, and there were a lot of people, I think, who really struggled just to make ends meet. However, like the majority of people who I went to school with were really struggling. Just, I think their families just to, you know, just to get by. But we all lived together somehow. Like we all, it was just a community. But at some point, I think it was maybe high school, you start to recognize, oh, we have different options. I can go to college and you can't. I can get a car and you can't. Like, it was like, you start to see that you have different options. And that if I start to talk too much about all the options that I have, that your friends aren't going to like that, right? Then they're not going to want to be your friends anymore. Because why should they like that?
Is there a story about something that happened or a relationship maybe that you had, something that sort of pushed on the nerve of class distinction or class?
Mm. I mean, somebody I think about a lot is my best friend when I was a little girl lived down the road towards Orford from here. And we were just, I don't know, super tight. And then when I was maybe fifth grade, like we would go, you know, we would always be back and forth in each other's houses. And then something happened. I think it was in fifth grade. And I don't really remember, but I remember that I was doing a lot of theater. And I don't think that that was something that she was maybe interested in. But then when I think back on it, it's like, who were the kids who were like putting on plays with me? It was like all the rich kids. And then she wasn't. But then we stopped being friends. And then we went to different high schools. A lot of kids from Lyme went to Orford or Thetford. I think, I'm not sure which high school she went to. And I went to Hanover. And for a long time, kids in Lyme, you had to pay extra if you wanted to go to Hanover High School. That was like part of it. It's like you could go to Hanover High School, but you had to pay extra. So that meant your parents had to have extra money to go. I remember my parents being really, or my mom and her partner being really gung-ho, like, no, we have to pay for all kids to go to Hanover High School if they want to, which is, of course, fair. But what she didn't see was the consequences of that, which is that then this became a town that was a sending town for Hanover High School, and then the property values went up, and then the people who were just living here for generations ended up selling their land, and now they couldn't possibly afford to live here anymore. And so that was the consequence of that decision, which I remember my mother was very adamant about, that we had to do that. We had to make that change in the town, that policy change. But it's had this huge impact on this town that I don't think she could have foreseen.
So it was essentially, we need this to be fair, but making that decision meant that people couldn't afford to stay.
Right, exactly. All the people who grew up here, and they just can't afford to live here anymore. And I feel that way, like with this house. Like if I can't afford to hang on to this house, my children, they're not even interested in coming back here. They don't even want to be here, but they're not going to be able to, they could never afford to buy into this neighborhood. I mean, we're not that rich, right? Maybe that's the difference between bottom of the rich and top of the rich pile. And so many people that I grew up with are gone. And then there are just a few of us left in town.
And you think it's because of property values?
Oh, it is 100% because of, I don't think, I know. It's because of property values, yeah. But there's still a lot of poor people here in the state, in the two states, and there's no place to live anymore. as this place becomes more and more attractive or appealing to people who have a lot of money. Like if you look at all the different counties in the Upper Valley, you can just go like money, no money, money, no money. And the more that money kind of expands, then there's like less and less places for the no money. Where are they going to go?
This is Erica Heilman with Vermont Public.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Carly Berlin, Adia Gulston, and Bob Kinzel. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelyan, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. I'm off tomorrow, but I'll be back on Friday, so I'll talk to you later.